to state and city governments, to business, media, corporations, higher education. Folks pushed back and held up like whatever little corner of the norms of liberal democracy that they were supposed to hold up. And what we've seen this time around that I think has been one of the dominant themes of the last 6 months has been just an enormous degree of people obeying in advance, people treating Trump as the new normal and trying to, you know, go along to comply, to secure their own safety and position in under this would-be dictator. And this is what we talk about when we talk about this internally. We talk about the aura of inevitability, the idea that, you know, this guy is in power. He's going to stay in power. You just got to make your peace with it and figure out how to secure your own safety. And I think that's what we've seen across a bunch of facets of society, and part of how we get something like a military parade, which is that anybody in the military who was prepared to tell Donald Trump this is a bad idea is saying no, that DC government is in a fundamentally different posture than it was in 2017. And, you know, it's just part of a broader phenomenon, right? California does not want the National Guard. Nobody in DC wants the wants a military parade. The only person who wants all of these theatrics, all of these authoritarian tactics, these militarized crackdowns on our communities, the only person who wants, or the person who wants this, is Donald Trump. And so fundamentally, we've got to collectively generate the pushback that kicks other parts of society, the other people who are responsible for pushing back wherever they are, back into gear. We've got to, by showing up in large numbers, generate the conditions for courage that let other people push back too.
So finally, Leah Greenberg, if you can talk about No King's Day. I mean, before I said 18,000, but I think the number is 1,800 cities and towns and villages and counting. But how you're organizing, and also your decision not to hold a major protest in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, as Trump threatens to use heavy military force against protesters, but how the organizing is taking place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, Indivisible is a movement of regular people. We are working with partners and an extraordinary coalition across the entire pro-democracy coalition, from veterans groups like our friends at Common Defense, labor unions, civil rights organizations, immigrant rights groups, faith leaders. We really want to pull in as many people as possible into this collective moment of peaceful defiance of a would-be dictator. Now, these events are organized by people in your community, right? They are overwhelmingly volunteers who are putting them together in order to create a community space for us to push back. There are, as you said, there are actually 1,900 on the map as of this morning, and it continues to rise. We anticipate hitting over 2,000 events around the country by the end of today. If you are pretty much anywhere, wherever you are, and you are probably about less than 30 minutes away from your closest No Kings event, they have incredible coverage, including in really red areas where you might not expect there to be resistance. That what we're finding is that this is everywhere. So if you are interested, you can go to nokings.org and you can look on our map and find the event that is closest to you. If there is not an event that is close to you, there is still time to organize one yourself, pull together a few folks in your community, and collectively say, we're here to declare no kings, stop the raids, stand together as communities, and reclaim our democracy.
Thank you so much, Leah Greenberg of Indivisible, and JoJo Sweat, former Marine and Common Defense. Coming up, we'll also look at growing condemnation of President Trump's travel ban, which went into effect Monday in 12 countries. Stay with us.
इस शहर में ओ कोई प्यार नहीं इस शहर में ओ ain't no love in the heart of the city ain't no love in the heart of town show me is a pity. Ain't no love since you ain't around. Oh, since you've been around.
No Love in the Heart of the City, rendition of Zeeshan B in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
And I'm Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're looking now at the growing condemnation of President Trump's travel ban, which went into effect Monday, banning citizens of 12 countries from entering the United States. Afghanistan, Burma, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, and the Republic of Congo, not to be confused with the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It also imposes heightened restrictions on people from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela who are outside the U.S. and don't hold a valid visa. Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown said he may challenge the ban with what he called a hostile Supreme Court. Brown spoke Sunday with Washington State Representative Daria Farivar, the state's first elected Middle Eastern politician, first Iranian-American woman elected to the Washington State Legislature.
This ban will hurt people, real people. It will tear families apart at life's most sacred moments. Keep loved ones from mourning, celebrating, and holding each other close in their final moments. It'll steal opportunities from brilliant students who deserve a future. It promises 4 more years of separation, 4 more years of sorrow, and we cannot allow it.
The president's order is clearly unfair, discriminatory, and will impact millions and millions of people who pose no risk whatsoever to our country. And when we couple this travel ban with everything else that we are seeing in this country at this moment, including the president's violent escalation of events in California this week, we know what we are seeing from the president of the United States of America is creeping authoritarianism.
This follows Trump's first travel ban in 2017. Immigrant rights groups have been organizing as the ban takes effect this week, including two organizers who join us now. In New York, Gerline Joseph is co-founder and executive director of Haitian Bridge Alliance, and Murad Awouda is president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition, usually based in New York City and today in Montgomery, Alabama. Welcome to both of you to Democracy Now! Gerline, let's begin with you. Haiti is one of the countries included in this travel ban. So if you could talk about the impact of that on Haiti, which is dependent not only so much on aid, international aid, but also on remittances from Haitians working in the U.S.
Thank you so much for having me. And the reality is what we are seeing right now with the travel ban targeting countries like Haiti. And for those who don't know, Haiti is literally 90 minutes away from Miami. And instead of addressing the root causes of the issues in Haiti that are in part caused by U.S. foreign policy towards Haiti, and also looking into how the guns and the money and the ammunition is being funneled through Haiti to continue to destabilize the country, we are punishing Haiti for what is going on right now. And the attack on Haiti and the multiple other countries, majority black and Muslim countries, are a clear example of why we continue and we must fight to make sure that people have the right to migrate. And the current ban literally separating families. I spoke to 3 people as we got the announcement, and 2 of them were supposed to go visit family in Canada. And they are stuck. They are afraid to leave, not being able to come back to continue their lives and their studies in the United States because they are Haitian passport holders. What will that mean when they try to leave or we enter the country? Will have a big impact on how the community continues to move forward.
So do you know, Gerline, why Haiti was put on this list? And also, our news from the top of the show, the number of internally displaced people has reached a record 1.3 million in Haiti. The International Organization for Migration saying the figures jumped almost 25% since December due to the escalating violence. The kind of impact this total ban will have.
Thank you, Amy. They are saying that people from Haiti tend to overstay their visas. And I want to clarify a couple of things. For the past almost 3 years, the consular section of the U.S. embassy in Haiti has been closed. There is no way for someone in Haiti to be able to access to get a visa. They have to go to a third country to even be able to apply and get the visa if you are a Haitian national. As you mentioned, 1.3 million people who are completely displaced within the country. And at the same time, we are hearing that there might be a deportation flight to Haiti within the next few days. We are looking into how that will continue in the destabilization of the country, but at the same time, how that impact people here in the U.S. and around the world with the trauma and the terror that we continue to see impacting people, unable to go to work. I went to church on Sunday. About one-third of the people were afraid to come to church. We are seeing empty churches, empty workplaces. We are seeing the impact of this Trump travel ban and other immigration policies completely destroying communities that are vulnerable, and we must be able to push back. So it is imperative that people understand what's happening, and we continue to say that they are using immigration as a scapegoat to be able to dismantle every fabric of who we are as a country, from DEI to women issues to LGBTQ. Happy Pride Days to those who are celebrating, and the erasure of African American history. So they are using immigration and immigrant communities as a scapegoat to continue to divide and conquer. And we are seeing that they have had a lot of practice, but we are here pushing back, fighting on behalf of those communities and making sure that they are protected. From California in San Diego to Los Angeles.
I want to bring Murad Awada into the conversation with the New York Immigration Coalition, though today he happens to be in Montgomery. And Murad, I think that's interesting you're in Montgomery, because you have President Trump calling out the National Guard, federalizing it in Los Angeles. The last time this happened, I mean, it hasn't happened 60 years, was in the civil rights era, was to guarantee that the Selma to Montgomery march of civil rights workers led by Dr. Martin Luther King and John Lewis would be able to march. That was against the governor at the time and President Trump now 60 years later, not because of civil rights issues, but actually against civil rights issues, is making this move. But I wanted to ask you about this ban. In 2017, we were talking about a Muslim ban. This ban of all, absolute ban on this series of countries and partial ban on others, the impact this has.
The impact that this has on U.S. citizens is going to be immense. This means that people who have family abroad, who are in the process of actually trying to do the paperwork to get their family to come visit them, you know, to share the life celebrations that we all love, or when we need to say our farewells to family members who pass, will not be possible anymore. This is going to rip families apart. This is going to continue to double and triple down on the terror that this administration is waging against immigrant communities across the board. And what we need to do is, as my sister Gerlene mentioned earlier, is actually stand up and continue to fight back against this. The Trump administration is trying to see how far they can take all that they're doing to ensure that they can really use immigrant communities as a test case. And I often say this, if some of us don't have rights in this country, none of us do. This is a call to all Americans to start standing up and fighting back This is going to be the test case. So there's always a route that the administration continues to try to find. There was reports yesterday on MSNBC that what they're doing in LA, which is horrifying to immigrant communities, but also to Americans, is going to be spread across the country and targeting U.S. cities like New York City and other blue cities across the country.
And Murad, I just want to, because Gerlin mentioned that one of the reasons, justifications given by the Trump administration for imposing the travel ban on certain countries was people who overstayed their visas. Now, Chad is an example of a country that's been banned where almost 50% of people overstay. Spain, for instance, only 2.4% overstay. But the absolute numbers, there is an exponential difference. So in the case 2023 to 2024, the 50% overrate stay from a Chad amounted to 377 people as against 20,000 people from Spain. So if you could comment on what you think, and we have a minute left, on what the real justification for this ban, the countries that were selected, and then the New York for All Act that you're advocating.
So the Trump administration doesn't need any help in trying to come up with frivolous excuses. That's all this is. They are looking for excuses to say that this is why they're doing this. And they don't need to try to sugarcoat things anymore because we already know who they are. And we've known who they are. They are an administration that is gung-ho on destroying what this nation stands for. Immigration and the U.S. is an American value. Like, I don't know how much more to explain this, but their excuses continue to fly in the face of facts. And what we're doing right now across the state of New York is fighting for the New York for All Act, which would prohibit state collusion with immigration enforcement. We have a few days left in the state legislature, and we're urging the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly, as well as Governor Hochul, to really stand up and protect our communities. We need to ensure that we are doing everything that we can to protect New Yorkers. New York for All Act is a public safety measure. We want to keep all New Yorkers safe, and we can't do that if we don't have the laws in place to do it. So we're calling on our state legislator to have the courage to stand up and to fight back with us by passing the New York for All Act today.
Murad Abdowda, New York Immigration Coalition, thanks so much for joining us. And Gerlin Joseph here in New York of the Haitian Bridge Alliance. Coming up, Israel is continuing to detain eight people after Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid. Four others on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported. We'll get an update from a Spanish crew member who's been deported back to Spain.
So.
Safu by Amadou and Mariam, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
And I'm Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City, here for the 50th anniversary of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. Hundreds of heads of community radio stations have gathered to talk about the importance of independent media. But we're moving on to what's happened on the high seas. Officials in Gaza have accused Israeli forces of killing at least 31 more Palestinians who are attempting to collect aid at a food distribution site south of Gaza City. A spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense said 200 people were also wounded as Israeli forces attacked the crowd with tanks and drones in the latest massacre of aid seekers. This comes as Israel's continuing to detain eight people who were detained Monday when Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid on the high seas. Four others on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported, including Greta Thunberg, who's made her way back to Sweden, the famous climate activist. Dr. Baptiste André, a French doctor who was on board the Madeleine, is now back in France. And Greta Thunberg, before going to Sweden, was deported to Paris, where she spoke to reporters.
They did an illegal act by kidnapping us on international waters and against our will, bringing us to Israel, keeping us in the bottom of the boat, not letting us getting out and so on. But that is not the real story here. The real story is that there is a genocide going on in Gaza and a systematic starvation following the siege and blockade now, which is leading to food, medicine, water that are desperately needed to get into Gaza is prevented from doing so.
Some Gaza flotilla crew members now reportedly face a 100-year entry ban. For more, we're joined in Lorona, Spain, by Sergio Toribio, a Spanish activist with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, who was one of the 12 on board the Madeleine flotilla to Gaza, delivering humanitarian aid, and has just been deported back to his home country of Spain. Welcome to Democracy Now, Sergio Toribio. Describe to us what happened when the Madeleine flotilla was intercepted by Israeli forces in the middle of the night in international waters.
We have this this night watch between 12 and 4, and around 1 in the morning, we have the visit of two fast boats that they didn't give any radio instruction or they say anything, you know, to us. They just crossed by us, you know, like trying to intercept us, but nothing else. They left, we raised the alarm. Because we've been trained for that, no? We were training the last days. We have some case of attack, no? The thing is, they left. They didn't say anything on the radio. And in by 10, 15 minutes, we have a visit of a drone, a close-range drone. This drone was trained to come very close to the ship, and he get hit one of the wires of the mast, and he left on the water. So, like 2 minutes later, we got another two big drones, one with a very powerful light, and the other was throwing over us, over the whole ship, over the cabin, over us, like a white paste. You know, we didn't even know what is still yet. So we get close inside the cabin, the cabinet with our life rags, ready to get assaulted, because we trained, as I said. And in like half an hour after throwing this seed, this paste of kind of pine that when you touch it or get in contact with it, it gets black and very very slippery, you know, for example, in the floors of the deck. So at the end of this attack, there were two fast boats approaches us by starboard and port side, and then they give us a message in English through the speakers, like they were about to embark us, they were not to harm us, they were trying to keep a bit lower the nerves, no? Like raising hands, be quiet. So at the end, they boarded us like 12 well-armed with M4, shotguns, guns, knives, you know, covered up to the ace, more than 12 soldiers. You know, they get us like closed in the cabin. We've been like master station, and they move it one per one. They move it on the bow of the ship. They asked us, they registered us, and when they gathered the 12, the medic of this command, they come to us to ask for some medical condition or if someone was injured. They offered some water, they offered some food, and they kept us in the deck of the boat for around 15 hours. until like 12 in the morning, something like that, between 12 and 2, because I didn't have a clock. It was when the sun started to really get warm to us. They moved us inside the ship, and they keep it under the decks like for another 10 hours, 12 hours, until we reach Tel Aviv Harbor.
And so, Sergio, tell us what happened then. If you can explain what happened when you were first brought into Ashdod, and then why four of you were deported, you, Greta Thunberg, and two others, and others remain there in Israel.
Yeah. The thing is, after the army give the command to us from the ship to land to the police, to the Israeli police, and they registered us again, they passed us the dogs, I guess that is normal procedures, and they put us in tables with another agents trying to get us to sign this. We tried to enter in a military zone, but we've been at more than 100 miles in international waters. That cannot be possible that it was a military zone, as they said. So I guess they kidnapped us, you know. They forced us out. When our destiny was clear.
And can you say why you went on this ship? Why you were part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition named for Gazan fisherwoman, the first Gazan fisherwoman?
Yeah. I get this because I am an activist, and I thought that Palestinian people deserve that we put in the whole world, no? What is happening there, that is a genocide. So for me, it's like I have the chance to join the flotilla, and I decide to help them in the way I can, no matter how.
And Sergio, you've said that you would do this all over again. If you could talk about that.
Yes. I'm trying to get in this march from Egypt, from El Cairo. But the thing is, it's a very short time. I have a window very short. So I don't think it's going to be possible this time. But of course, I'm an activist, and I'm, you know, for the last 11 years, I've been in marine protection. I've been rescuing people in the Mediterranean for 2 years and a half. And now I have this chance to join the flotilla and to join any kind of Gaza, pro-Gaza movement, you know, for help Palestinian and for help, for fight against this this genocide, you know.
And Sergio, can you tell us, since you've returned to Spain, what kind of reception have you received?
The first for me was the diplomatic on Gaza's migration center in the airport on Tel Aviv. It was our consul there and our vice consul. That was super nice to see how they behave and how to see they've been worried, of course, about what happened. You know, because we didn't make anything wrong, and we didn't try to enter any kind of military zone. We've been in the international waters trying to deliver some food, like symbolic, because my mission was to break the siege they are having illegally against these people, the Palestinian people, and in Gaza. It was very nice and very warm to have also all the media teams waiting in Barcelona. A friend I didn't know that was also waiting for me there, you know, from the Gaza movement, from this flotilla coalition. And of course, when I reached Logroño, that is my home, you can imagine my mom and my sister were there, that they were very, very worried about.
And do you see, Sergio, do you imagine more people joining the next time there is such a flotilla from other places in the world? You just have 30 seconds.
I'm pretty sure that this is going to happen, you know, because now more and more people is knowing what is happening. And not only, you know, we are a lot of different countries working on it. You know, it's not only the countries we've been in this flotilla, because it happened in other flotillas, and they attacked this.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Sergio. Sergio Toribio is a Spanish activist and member of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Special thanks to the team at Skyhop Youth Media Arts Center, Larissa Trout, Don Barfus, Maya Hardy, Mary Allison, Brian Barrios. I am Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Some politicians love to tell us that we have to choose between policies that support people or policies that grow the economy. But we don't have to choose. A strong economy isn't only about stock markets and GDP. It's about all of us being able to afford our rent, our groceries, our medication. When we all thrive, the economy thrives too. Together, we can demand better. Take action at demandbettertoday.ca.
CJ.